Doug Traversa is a minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tullahoma. He completed his seminary studies at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. Doug is a retired Air Force officer, and he and his wife, Jancy, live in Tullahoma. They have several dogs and usually have a few foster dogs around the house, too. Doug will speak on the topic, Wrestling with Confederate Symbols, and let us welcome Doug.
A couple of introductory things. First of all, this is a great experiment to see how this projector will work in this building and for you. So if you have trouble seeing it, tell me, I won't do it again. I have a lot of sermons that I use visual aids for at our church because we just plug the computer right in. We've got a screen here, TV, so it's very easy. I don't mind dragging the stuff out, but if it's not a good picture or anything, I won't do this again. Does anyone know if there's a way to just shut off these lights without shutting all the lights off? Anyone who operates the lights? Does anyone know? Okay, well, we're going to do the best we can, and we'll see how it goes. On Wednesday, June 18th, 9 people were murdered at the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm not going to dignify the murderer by stating his name, but his stated reason was to help ignite a race war. However, his actions did not only not ignite a race war, they've had a lot of consequences that I'm sure he did not anticipate. Discoveries of photos of him holding a Confederate battle flag have resulted in a major backlash against the symbol of the Confederate States of America. And we're going to get into the history of this later and the correct terminology and all that. So as soon as you start talking about it, those who are historians go one route, and that is the correct wording of everything. I'm going to try to do that today. But that doesn't change the underlying message of what we're talking about. You see, his actions were despicable and really beyond my ability to comprehend. To try to figure out how somebody can have that much hatred residing in their heart or what the causes of that hatred might be, it's beyond really a 20 or 30 minute sermon. You simply cannot go into the depth necessary to understand that kind of hatred and evil. But I can understand and discuss the reaction against the flag, which has been ongoing since that day, moving faster than I ever anticipated throughout this country. Now, in fairness, I want to make this statement up front. I was not born in the South. However, I have chosen to be a Southerner. I have lived far more of my life in Southern states than I have in Northern states. And if you knock out states that didn't even exist during the Civil War, like Idaho, or foreign countries, then well over 75% of my life has been in the South. And I've chosen to make Tennessee my home for probably the rest of my life. So I can't speak as a native-born Southerner, and I don't have this huge emotional attachment to Southern symbols that some people may have, but I speak as someone who loves the state of Tennessee and speaks about the future of the state of Tennessee and the future of the South. Try not to hold it against me that I was born in New York, because I literally only remember two snippets of my 5 years there. So it's technically my home, but Tennessee's my home. And I also want to start this discussion by saying if we talk about symbols, we can certainly say a great many things about the symbol of our country, the stars and stripes. And it, too, is a symbol of oppression. It's a symbol hated by some people. And if you put yourself in their shoes, it's very easy to understand why. If you are Native American, you don't love the stars and stripes. You probably hate the stars and stripes if you think about what was done to your people by invaders. If you live in a country like Vietnam or Iran, where we overthrew their elected government many years ago in the interest of oil, or even Iraq, there are plenty of people in Iraq who did not appreciate what we did, and they're still fighting to this day. Our flag can easily be a symbol of invasion and death. I acknowledge that. I own that. This is not about the North was good and the South was bad. And if anyone leaves here thinking that, let me try to clarify that right now. And I hope you won't go out of here thinking that. Anytime there's a war, anytime two governments are in opposition, you can find blame on both sides. And our country does not acknowledge its wrongdoing nearly enough. And if I hear one more quote about American exceptionalism, I will scream, I think. Because humility and open acknowledgement of the wrongs we've done is far more healthy than telling the world how great we are and we're God's chosen people and we have just done all these wonderful things. We have done wonderful things. We've done awful things too. And we must own that. Today I'm going to talk about Confederate flags, many of them, and the legacy of the South. As I said, I have chosen to make this my home, and I don't want our acknowledgement by the rest of the world to be limited to slavery, segregation, and the desire to leave the Union. That's not what the South should be about. One of the aftermaths of this shooting was the fact that South Carolina has now removed the Confederate battle standard. When I gave this sermon, that hadn't even happened yet back at my home church. That's how fast things are moving. This flag was raised over South Carolina's statehouse in 1962. It was raised in response to a federal order to desegregate the South. That's what that flag became a symbol of at that point. In 2000, the flag was removed from the statehouse dome to be flown on the lawn as part of a Confederate soldier's memorial. That's the history there, and now it's gone. In response to this shooting, other things have happened. Retailers have stopped selling merchandise with the rebel flag or the Confederate flag or the battle standard of Northern Virginia, which is its true name. Walmart, Amazon, eBay, Sears, Google, Target, and Etsy, whatever that is, have all stopped selling these things. Four major U.S. manufacturers of flags, four major manufacturers have stopped making Confederate flags. And there will probably be more reactions. This is an ongoing thing. You are living history right now. Just think about the fact that these flags have been flown despite opposition from the oppressed people, their voices not being heard, for decades, if you start with 1962 as the time when the South really started owning this symbol to fight against desegregation. And now it's all changing very, very rapidly. Now, it is very easy to change a symbol or to attack a symbol. Symbolism has power. It represents things we hate, but taking the flag down doesn't fix the systemic problems in this country of racism. But it's still an important step. I'm not going to diminish the value of that symbolism because symbols have great power. White races have used the Confederate flag as well as the swastika from Nazi Germany and other symbols to show how much they hate other races and elevate themselves. And so this symbol was part of a person's life who was able to go into a church, pray with people for an hour, and then murder them. And then post pictures proudly holding that flag and burning the stars and stripes. Symbols have power, so we have to acknowledge that also as we talk about this. So as I go into these dangerous waters of the Civil War and segregation and Confederate symbols, there are two points that will inevitably come up. Sometimes people who are apologists or defenders of the South almost treat these like gotcha moments. Like you say something wrong and gotcha. You don't know what you're talking about because you used the wrong term or you said something that's technically incorrect, even if in spirit it's true. The first one is the name of the flag. Now, there are many names for the standard, what I will call rebel flag. The red flag with the blue diagonal cross with 13 white stars in it. If it's a square flag, it's the battle standard of the Army of Northern Virginia. If it's rectangular, it's the battle standard of the Army of Tennessee. Some people call it the Southern Cross. So if I say Confederate flag, Rebel flag, or any of those names, I'm talking about this symbol, and we're going to show it up here in a minute. But if you ever say that's the flag of the Confederacy, people will jump on you and say, no, it wasn't. And technically, that's true. But what other flag has come to represent that so readily recognizable as that particular flag? Secondly, is if you ever say the Civil War was about freeing the slaves, you will be challenged immediately, because technically that is a false statement. The Civil War was not about freeing the slaves. I'm going to explain that later, but you just let that think in your head right now. If you think the North declared war on the South and went to war to free the slaves, that's technically incorrect. That may be the result, that may be the motivation of many people involved in it, but technically incorrect. So I got you. The gotcha moments out there, I've acknowledged them. Now we're moving on. Jancy's going to try to operate this for me. I gave her a little bit of training. There we go. So the visual component begins. This flag, the square flag, is the battle flag or the battle standard of the Army of Northern Virginia. Go on to the next one and just hit return each time. That one's rectangular. Otherwise, the pattern's the same. This is the one flown by the Army of Tennessee. If you make that blue a little bit lighter blue, it becomes the flag used on the ships of the Confederate States of America. And there were both the square and the rectangular flag used at different times, one at sea, one when in port. So you have the naval ensign and the naval jack, that's what they're called. So that symbol was used by armies. It was used by navies in battle. But it was not the flag of the Confederate States of America. Next flag. This is the stars and bars. Sometimes the other flag I just showed you is called the stars and bars. That's incorrect. This is the stars and bars. The reason it's stars and bars is the stripes are so thick, they look more like bars than stripes. And the stars represent the number of states that seceded from the Union. So this flag evolves over time. Next one. Starting at 7, then 9, next, then 11, next, 13. 13 included Missouri and Kentucky, which technically never seceded, but the South included them and made this flag. So they claim 13 states in the Confederate States of America. And those were the first 2 years of the Civil War. These flags represented the Confederate States. Go on to the next one. From 1863 to March 1865, just before the war ended, this was the flag of the Confederate States of America. Now we've incorporated that battle flag into the flag of the states. So, not technically the same thing, but that symbol has now become extremely powerful. It is now on the flag of the Confederate States, but it also has this huge white field. One of the problems was the stars and bars and the stars and stripes look somewhat alike in battle. And you do follow your flags into battle, so you wanted something that looked different from the American flag. Now, I want to read to you a quote from the designer of this flag. You will not find this quote in any official documents from the Confederate States stating why this is the design of the flag, but this is what the designer said. As a people, we are fighting to maintain the heaven-ordained supremacy of the white man over the inferior or colored race. A white flag would thus be emblematic of our cause. As a national emblem, it is significant of our higher cause, the cause of a superior race, a higher civilization contending against ignorance, infidelity, and barbarism. He also wrote that this flag would be hailed by the nations of the world as the white man's flag. But it wasn't about slavery. Next one. Right at the end of the war, they added this thick red stripe to the flag. It was hardly ever used because you only had a month left in the war. If you're flying that white flag and the wind's not blowing, what you have is a white flag. Is it a good idea to be carrying a white flag in the battle? No. And they realized after 2 years, that probably wasn't the best idea, so they stuck the big red bar on it. This is called the bloodstain banner. Next slide. I also want to show you current state flags. On the top, I don't know how to get rid of that thing, so I'm sorry about that. The
see if you can move it. Right.
Move that up there.
Yeah. It's not worth dancing
it. Yeah, because if it goes, I don't know if I'll ever get it up again. It took me 20 minutes to get this thing running. The Southern Confederate States of America flag is on the bottom. The top is the current Georgia flag. They took the flag of the Confederate States of America and put some symbols in the middle where the stars are. And other than that, that is the flag of the Confederate States of America. That's what Georgia flies today. Next slide. This is Mississippi. So there's your emblem there. These are the two southern states now that still embrace Confederate symbols in their state flag. Next slide. Symbols can change. The meaning of the symbols can change. If you can't see this, this is a statue of the Buddha. And on the Buddha's chest is what looks like a swastika. It's actually reverse. It's called a manji. That symbol never had anything to do with anything that the Nazi Party stood for. Go on to the next slide. These symbols of the swastika are found in the United States of America in the early 20th century. On the right, I'll read it for you, it says, "May our glorious flag and this lucky star guide you and keep you wherever you are." And on the right, you see swastika, good luck, light, and love. See, this was a symbol of good luck. It comes from Asia. And it's been used by many religions, including Hinduism and Buddhism and virtually all the religions of the Asian region. And you can find symbols of Christianity that incorporated the swastika also. So this symbol has been used almost worldwide, at least in the Eastern Hemisphere, and it always represented something good. Next slide. However, you can also see that you have different variations. China will often use two of them, reversed images. Tibet with the little dots there, and then the Buddhist manji is a reversed swastika. It means good fortune and well-being. Next slide. There are efforts now in Europe to reclaim this symbol from the Nazis. Probably a misguided effort. But you can see one, this is evil, this is not. And on the other side, keep calm and reclaim the swastika. In some countries, it's illegal to have a swastika showing at all. We lived in Germany for 3 years. I'm a World War II buff. I build models. If you go into the stores in Germany and you buy a model of a German plane from World War II and you look at the cover of the model box, there are no swastikas on any of the airplanes, even though they always had them on the tails. Not in Germany, they don't. You cannot have swastikas. And there's other countries also where it's banned. And so there is a movement amongst people claiming Buddhist or Hindu heritage that we're going to reclaim this symbol because it doesn't belong to the Nazis. Next slide. This is something you can buy right now at Cafe Press. You can get t-shirts and coffee mugs and anything else they can print stuff on. This is the reversed one. This is the manji, and it says 100% Buddhist. Would you wear a t-shirt like that? It's technically true. Technically true. But the symbolism is so powerful and so negative that if you wore this shirt, people would assume you are a racist or a Nazi or both, and they wouldn't go, "Oh, that's fascinating. That's a Buddhist symbol." They just think you were nuts. Because why are you wearing that? It represents one of the most evil movements in the modern history. Why would you wear that on your t-shirt? Just let it go. And you know what? I participate in Buddhist meetings and go to Buddhist zendos. They don't have this. They've let it go because of the evil association of this symbol. Next slide. But the Confederate flag, coming back to what we were talking about, the Southern Cross, has a new meaning today. It doesn't necessarily represent the effort of the states to secede from the Union. Next slide. This flag became very popular in the South when the orders to desegregate came around, or the threat of desegregation came around, because it started in 1948, and this became the symbol of the Dixiecrats. Some of you old people like me remember Strom Thurmond. He ran for president in 1948 as a third-party candidate challenging the Democratic Party, and they stood for one thing: maintaining segregation. And they actually got Truman thrown off the ballot in four states, and his name was on, and he won four states in the South. This was their symbol. This became the symbol of segregation. Not a symbol we should be proud of today. That's the history of how this flag became popular in the South again. If you talk to people who've lived around here a long time, and we had some in our church sharing, in their youth, they never saw this flag being flown until desegregation became the issue. And suddenly, this was the symbol of rebellion against the federal government because we want to remain segregated. Okay, now you can turn that whole thing off. We're finished with it. So anyway, that was my effort at the visual component. I hope everyone could see it. Now, that's the history of the Southern flags. If someone wants to argue that the flags are about heritage, not slavery or segregation, then we need to ask ourselves, well, what is this heritage? Why did the Southern states want to secede from the Union? Because arguing about the Civil War, or the War of Northern Aggression, as Southerners like to call it, trying to pin down why we fought the war is, in my mind, a fool's quest. It's the wrong question, because there were millions of people involved in that, and each individual has their own motivation for going to war. We know that some Northern soldiers were fighting to free the slaves because they wrote about it. They wrote letters home, and they talked about it, and to them, this was the noble cause. To Southerners, it could have been about repelling invaders. It could have been about maintaining segregation or about white supremacy. But remember, as is often in the case in wars, it's the rich people letting those who aren't quite so well-to-do fight their battles over money. Because less than 2% of the Southerners owned slaves. Others would rent slaves. So that's one of those sort of deceptive statements also, because plenty of people rented them to work the fields but didn't own them outright. But ultimately, it's about money. It's about wealth. It's about production. And it's about people who didn't want to inconvenience themselves and lose money by doing the right thing. And before we become too morally superior, I fully expect down the road, 50, 100 years from now, when we've got these meat substitutes that are so perfect, you can't tell them from real meat, and then we'll stop torturing the animals and putting them in these factory farms and doing all the horrible things we do now and close our eyes because it's just too inconvenient to give up that really yummy meat. Well, it's sort of the same thing, except you're dealing with people now. And it's certainly morally offensive to own people and abuse them, but it's how we produce our cotton. It's our economy. It's our money. Well, we got to come up with a reason to justify it. Well, you know, the Bible says slavery is okay, or the white race is superior, and so they're so much better off because we brought them over from Africa and they can hear the gospel here. So at least when they die, they'll get to go to heaven. Better that than being in Africa and dying in a lost state. All sorts of repugnant justifications. The South was sure God was on their side, and they could quote Bible verses to do it. So I don't want to argue about or even go into why we fought the war. I mean, I'm willing to concede that the North wanted to maintain the Union, and the South, well, that's the question now. What is this Southern heritage? I'm not going to give you my opinion. I'm going to read from the source documents. Why did Southern states want to secede from the Union? I'll let them speak for themselves, and then tell me it wasn't about slavery. First of all, South Carolina. In its declaration of immediate causes, which induce and justify the secession of South Carolina from the Federal Union. They spend a great deal of time, and I have the entire document right here. It's about 6 pages. You can look at it if you want. In summary, they were very angry that their slaves were escaping to the North and the Northern states weren't returning them. And furthermore, the Northern states were helping the slaves to escape, and that equates to stealing. And that if we're going to have a union of states, stolen property has to be returned. And they spend a lot of time talking about that in this document. And then they say, talking about the North, they have denounced as sinful the institution of slavery. They have permitted open establishment among them of societies whose avowed object is to disturb the peace and alloin the property of citizens. And alloin, I had to look up, it means to take away from and place far away, so steal the slaves, get them away from the South, to alloin the property of the citizens of other states. They have encouraged and assisted thousands of our slaves to leave their homes, and those who remain have been incited by emissaries, books, and pictures to servile insurrection. They're also angry that Abraham Lincoln was elected president, and they say a geographical line has been drawn across the Union. And all the states north of that line have united in the election of a man, this is Lincoln, to the high office of President of the United States whose opinions and purposes are hostile to slavery. That, the election of Lincoln, was the straw that broke the camel's back. He is to be entrusted with the administration of the common government because he has declared that the government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free, and that the public mind must rest in the belief that slavery is in the course of ultimate extinction. South Carolina seceded because slavery was being threatened in their mind, and the election of Lincoln was the last straw. Time to leave. Texas. Ah, Texas. It's always good to have a state like Texas, which makes Tennessee look so much better. I'm sorry, Natalie. Natalie, my daughter-in-law is from Texas. She'll probably be embarrassed after I read this paragraph, though. If you didn't see the paper, in our paper in Tullahoma today, they had an article about Texas trying to rewrite the history books to prove that the Civil War wasn't about slavery. Texas has great chutzpah because in their declaration of the causes which impel the state of Texas to secede from the Federal Union, this is their document. Texas wrote this. I just can't believe the gall of some people. In all the non-slaveholding states, in violation of that good faith and comity which should exist between entirely distinct nations, the people have formed themselves into a great sectional party, now strong enough in numbers to control the affairs of each of these states based upon an unnatural feeling of hostility to these southern states. And this is the line, and they're beneficent and patriarchal system of African slavery. Beneficent means it's helpful and good. They're good and patriarchal system of African slavery. And then they're outraged about this. Because the northern states proclaim the debasing doctrine of the equality of all men. They are upset that the North proclaims this horrible, disgusting doctrine that all people are equal. Texas put that in writing. They proclaim the debasing doctrine of the equality of all men, irrespective of race or color, a doctrine at war with nature, in opposition to the experience of mankind, and in violation of the plainest revelations of divine law. But it wasn't about slavery. It wasn't about slavery. Mississippi. Our position is thoroughly identified with the institution of slavery. the greatest material interest of the world. Its labor supply is the product which constitutes by far the largest and most important portions of commerce on the earth. These products are peculiar to the climate verging on the tropical regions. And by an imperious law of nature, none but the black race can bear exposure to the tropical sun. These products have become necessities of the world, and a blow at slavery is a blow at commerce and civilization. That blow has been long aimed at the institution and was left at the point of reaching its consummation. There was no choice left but submission to the mandates of abolition or a dissolution of the Union. We either had to get rid of slavery or we had to leave the Union. We do not overstate the dangers to our institution, that's slavery. A reference to a few facts will sufficiently prove. The secession of the Southern states was all about slavery. You can argue what the war was about, but the states left the Union over slavery. And let's not kid ourselves, and don't let anyone argue otherwise. They said it in their documents. So it's not a matter of opinion. It's very clear. It was all about slavery. Slaves were escaping to the North and they weren't being returned. Abraham Lincoln, who was anti-slavery, was elected, and the South felt that they had to leave because war had been declared on slavery. And if they wanted to maintain this system that was so lucrative, they had to leave the Union. It's about slavery because it's about money. It was about the money. Follow the money. But the North was not morally superior. It didn't need the slaves. Just remember, when our founding fathers, who people like to hold up as prophets from God sometimes, when they established this nation, slavery was legal. Okay? So let's not pretend this was handed down like the Ten Commandments from God, and America was God's chosen nation, because even when our country was founded, there were horrible things legal throughout the nation, slavery being one of them. But at this point, the North didn't need it. People were now becoming, and that's not to say that everyone at the formation of our country was pro-slavery. That certainly wasn't true. But when you don't have your economy based on it, it's easier to be morally superior. It really is. So I'm not going to pretend North good, South bad. That is oversimplification. And let's be straight about that, too. It's much easier to be moral when it doesn't cost you lots of money or destroy your economy. But make no mistake, the Confederate symbols are without question closely and deeply tied to slavery or maintaining segregation. That's what they were used for. And to argue that it was about states' rights to secede from the Union is just trying to cloud the issue. Now try to see this through the eyes of the people who were oppressed under these flags, including the Southern Cross. Now, on the 4th of July, I was in, a parking lot for a strip mall where we live, and there's a guy driving around with two just monstrous Confederate flags, the Southern Crosses, and I don't even know that he was going anywhere. I think he was just driving back and forth to wave the flags. And I thought to myself, what message are you trying to send? What message would be received if I were black? I can't relate to that. I'm a white male. I have all the privileges this country has to offer, and I fully acknowledge that. And I can only imagine how disgusted or angry I might feel when people constantly throw that symbol in my face and then pretend it has nothing to do with slavery or segregation. What kind of a message are you trying to send when you do that? I don't know. Didn't ask the guy, but I found it offensive. Any value found in proclaiming Southern heritage with these symbols is far outweighed by the use of this symbol for oppression. whether it was the armies that fought to allow the southern states to secede to maintain their economy of slavery, or whether it was the forces of segregation like the Dixiecrats, or the white supremacists who use it today, it's just like the swastika. Why would you put that on your shirt? Why would you do that? But the flag is merely a symbol. The flag did not kill 9 people. But the ideology behind that flag certainly played a role. The idea that the equality of all men is debasing, like Texas stated when it seceded from the Union, that idea poisons people's minds and allows them to do horrific things or view one race as superior to another. The idea that slavery was a beneficent system, to quote Texas yet again, is so ludicrous that it should invite ridicule. But that's why Texas stated it was leaving the Union. Who would hold such a view today? Only the most fringe white supremacists would actually say it. How many people believe it? How many people flying the flag believe it, but pretend they don't? I don't know. But I suspect some do. Regardless of an individual's view of this flag, there is a pernicious ideology associated with it. I can't fully relate or grasp or understand how those who were oppressed might relate to it. I can't think of a symbol that was used to oppress white males in this country. So there isn't something I can equate it to. White males never suffered segregation. They never suffered slavery. And if they owned land, they always had the right to vote. Just remember, poor white men didn't get to vote initially. You had to own land. So, all I can say is, there are no symbols hanging in the back of pickup trucks to remind us of how white males were stomped down and treated as slaves and put into a beneficent system of slavery. But I'm going to take the word of those who oppose it and say they find it repugnant and hateful and demeaning. I have found that if you haven't walked in someone else's shoes, shut up and listen. I've never been female, so I don't understand the oppression of females in this country, the inequality that still exists and certainly existed in my youth. But if women tell me about it, I shut up and listen. If African Americans tell me about symbolism and how it hurts and demeans, I shut up and listen. If you're in a position of privilege, just listen. Just listen. We need to see through the eyes of those who have been oppressed. Symbols do matter. And in the South, in Tennessee, in the land that I have chosen, not by birth, but by choice to live in, because I love this place, we need symbols of inclusion. Not symbols of exclusion, not symbols of segregation, and not symbols of slavery, and not symbols of a divided country. So regardless of an individual's interpretation of the flag, it's quite a stretch for anyone to argue that that symbol is unifying, that symbol being the Southern Cross. It is not unifying and welcoming for all people, and therefore it has no business on government property at all. If an individual wants to fly it, fine, it's a free country. You can fly a Nazi flag if you want to. You're allowed to. That's what freedom is. But the government needs to step away from that stuff. And I'm glad to see a movement in that direction, and I hope it continues. I hope we can find symbols that will point to a unified future. They are greatly needed. May it be so.